Welcome to this edition of Buy Hold Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one website for expert investment analysis. Buy Hold Sell is a weekly show where two fund managers share their views on a selection of listed companies in their area of expertise. Buyers and sellers are what make the market, and you'll find that our guests don't always agree on the stocks being covered. Hit the subscribe button on your podcast player to be the first to receive new episodes each week. If there are stocks you'd like our guests to discuss, let us know by leaving a comment in the review segment. Remember, the views expressed in this show are not recommendations to invest. You should seek appropriate investment advice before making any investment decisions. And of course, please read the disclaimer in the show's notes. Let's get into the show.
Hello and welcome to this thematic episode of Livewire's Buy Hold Sell. I'm your host, Ali Selby, and today we're joined by two small cap resources specialists for their insight into digging up undiscovered gems. It's certainly an exciting time to be investing in the sector. We've seen the share prices of names such as Pilbara Minerals, Lynas Rare Earths, and Liontown really take off. But how do you invest in these undiscovered winners before they become household names? Well, to figure that out, we're joined by Tim Sargent from Airlie Griffiths Group and David Franklin from Argonaut. David, I might start on you. What are three essential ingredients of successful small caps in this sector?
Thanks, Ali. Look, the first ingredient is strong and proven management teams. They're more likely to execute the development and production plans effectively. And the market will rate them at a higher level. And finally, it's easier for them to raise money. The second ingredient is project location. So it's important that they operate in a country that has stable political situations, established mining codes, and consistent royalty and tax structures. And then thirdly, you know, great projects drive great companies. So we're looking for good quality assets, high grade, low OPEX, low CAPEX, and long mine lives.
Over to you, Tim. What are your three essential ingredients when investing in this sector?
Thanks, Ali. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with David. Number one is management. It's a cyclical and capital intensive industry. So capital allocation decisions at the right point in time of the cycle is absolutely paramount. So entrusting the right people to do that is critical. The second one is, I think, you need to be growing volumes and doing it in a sustainable manner. Mining is a fixed cost business, and invariably costs will creep higher. And you're also dealing with a finite life, resource in itself. So typically you mine the best stuff first. So if you're not growing volumes, down the track, trouble tends not to be far away. And look, I think the third point is companies that explore. Exploration is the most capital efficient way of growing your business, whether it's through increasing reserve and resource that translates to increased mine life. And you're also leveraging off the existing capital that you've sunk. So I think companies that explore are certainly valuable.
This is definitely a time and resources heavy industry. Tim, what are some of the signals that investors can look out for to know when to buy?
I'll start with the macro, because I think that's paramount. And that's probably three quarters of getting things right. So, understanding the commodity, where you are in that cycle is of paramount importance. And the one thing I'd say on that is, the market tends to underestimate, the peaks and the troughs. So things can go a lot further down as they can go a lot further up than you think. And we're seeing that at the moment. I think secondly, there's also, transactions or signposts, as I like to call them, that mark the beginning or the end of the cycle. And I think recently, Pilbara buying the assets off the receivers at Altura was, a really good signpost that lithium cycle was turning. In terms of the micro drivers, look, there's two that I rely on. One is looking at the grade profile, because that's the one thing about an asset you can't change is the grade. And of particular importance is the trajectory. You want to see it going up, because that's your best lead indicator on production and costs. And the second one is I like to find companies where they've identified or undertaken an acquisition for a second operation, or they've developed one organically. That typically leads to a diversification of cash flows. It leads to better decisions. You're not pushing an asset. The first asset is hard. You can step back and think about the bigger picture. And it tends to mark a turning point, I think, for companies.
David, over to you, particularly in the smaller emerging company area of this sector, what are the signals that investors can look out for to know when to buy?
Yeah, look, so we take a sort of a, what we describe as a top-down meets bottom-up type approach. So what we're looking for is commodities that have resilient growth profiles, and then we look for the best quality companies that are exposed to that commodity. So I think that's pretty important. The second is to look for catalysts. So, you know, is the company about to move into production? That's likely to lead to an adjustment in the risk profile that might have been applied during that development phase. We're also looking for any changes in management, good or bad. You know, often, you know, we've seen a couple of companies recently, you know, Genesis and Breaker, where you've had good appointments driving the price higher. Asset purchases and asset sales, you know, we've seen Sandfire recently make an acquisition that's really transformed their business. And then finally, just results, you know, quarterly results, often the market can over or under react, and that can create some opportunities.
There's also been this explosion in battery material explorers and producers over the past 18 months. David, I'll stay on you. Sure. How big is this opportunity and does it still have legs?
Yeah, look, we see the energy transition thematic as, you know, we're in the early stages of a multi-decade opportunity. That's going to see the decarbonisation of the power generation sector, the electrification of the transport sector. You know, it's happened quickly. It's in the mainstream now. 12 months ago, people weren't really focused on it, whereas now they are. We're seeing a lot of statistics and a lot of reporting, and everyone's slightly different, but the trend is the same. You know, demand is increasing.
Tim, over to you. Do you feel like this sector still has legs?
Yeah, look, I think it depends on your, certainly on your time horizon, Ali, but absolutely. If you sort of step back and look at where we are just from a penetration of some of those EV-related metals, you know, lithium, copper, rare earths, et cetera, where we are in terms of their penetration of that thematic. And if I look at lithium, that's probably the most penetrated at, you know, maybe 20% of lithium case uses, but it's in an industry that's sort of 500,000 tons that's growing 20 to 30%, you know, compound. Copper and nickel, you know, much bigger, you know, slower moving industries, but their penetration is only sort of 5% of EV related, you know, uses, and rare earths is probably somewhere in between. So I think just on the penetration story alone, you know, there's 70, 80, 90%, you know, further, you know, much further they can compound through time. So that, I think that talks to the multi-decade opportunity that David was referencing earlier.
We're talking here about copper, nickel, lithium and rare earths. Is there a different commodity that you think investors should be paying attention to?
Well, there's certainly one at the moment where certainly my views change and the markets has changed, and that's uranium. It's got a lot of traction of late, and I think what's changed is, you know, if you look back a couple of years, a lot of people positioned in uranium for the supply side. What was happening with the likes of Kazatomprom and Cameco sort of pulling their heads in and managing the market, so to speak. But the thing that with uranium that always sort of confounded me was that the demand outlook was actually very tepid. And whilst there was going to be a supplier side response, you know, on the demand side, you know, what were we really going to see? And post Fukushima, that's really, I guess, accentuated that. But what's transitioned in the last 6 or 9 months is a couple of important developments. One, firstly, is the institutionalization of the sector. You know, we've seen financial players emerge, and Sprott with their Sprott vehicles, the most high profile, but there's been others prior to, you know, Yellowcake, and there's a couple of other hedge funds, and Kazatomprom themselves have even in a vehicle now buying physical uranium. So I think that's changed it, and that's certainly put it on the radar. Look, the second thing is, and we've touched on it, it's the global decarbonisation story, and I guess the widening attention and the role that uranium could potentially play in that. And we're seeing, you know, companies like Japan and possibly even Germany sort of, you know, seeking to potentially unbend their hawkish view on nuclear.
David, over to you. Is there a different commodity that you think investors should be paying attention to? Is it uranium, like Tim mentioned there?
Yeah, look. I would comment on uranium as well. I think what's really fascinating is, again, as Tim alluded to, I think where the market was even a few months ago was there's probably a shortage in delivering the amount of uranium required from the existing producer base globally. Whereas now I think people are saying, well, you know, can nuclear power become a bigger part of the global energy generation mix? And I think the answer is probably yes. And the question is by how much? And I think that's encouraged those financial buyers to come into the market, which is putting pressure on price. So, you know, I think how uranium is perceived publicly will be really fascinating, but there is an opportunity there, and it's probably the one commodity that could really build market share in power generation globally.
Okay, David, I'm really excited for this. We asked you to bring along two stocks that are really exciting you in the small cap resources sector. What have you brought for us today?
Yeah, thanks, Ali. Look, the first one is Centaurus Metals. It's developing a nickel sulfide project in Brazil. It's aiming to be in production by 2024, producing 20,000 tonnes per annum. It's obviously very well timed with the nickel sulfide market required for batteries. What really appeals, it's a low carbon intensity project. It's easy processing, has a low carbon footprint. So, and it's long mine life. So 13 years, the resource is close to the surface, and CapEx is manageable at about $400 million. The second one is Sandfire Resources, which has been a bit unloved really over the last year as is De Grasse copper mine moves to completion over the next year. What they've announced more recently is the acquisition of the Matza mining complex in Spain for just under 1.9 billion US. And that's going to deliver an asset that's producing between 100 and 120,000 tonnes per annum for, you know, 10 years. So at low operating costs. So it's going to push it into a higher, you know, as a major Australian copper producer. The transaction was well timed. They're also developing a 50 to 60,000 tonnes per annum project in Botswana. So, you know, within a couple of years, they could be producing over 150,000 tonnes of copper at low cost. And with their current market cap only 2.4 billion, you know, there's good scope for a re-rating.
Okay, Tim, your time in the hot seat. What are the two most exciting small cap resources or material stocks in your view right now and why?
Yeah, I've gone a bit off piece, Ali, from the themes we've been talking about, but leveraging off, you know, the first question, and that's backing proven management teams with track records. So I've got two gold stocks for you today. The first one is Capricorn Metals. CMM is the co, and they're a gold producer. They produce about 120,000 ounces or so at the Karlawinda gold mine up in Iron Ore Country near Newman. But why I like Capricorn specifically is the management team led by Mark Clark, and they're proven through time. They're highly backable team that were Regis Resources, you know, in a previous decade. Prior to that, they were Equal Gold, and even going back, you know, there's a lot of them have you know, related to the Samantha Gold day. So, you know, unrivaled, I'd suggest, you know, management team in that space. But the other point too is they've just acquired a second asset. And I mentioned earlier about sort of looking for turning points. And I think this is one, the Mount Gibson asset they've purchased for about $40 million. I think it's a carbon copy of Karlawinda in 3 years' time. And if I'm right, that'll see them producing closer to 250,000 ounces production per annum, all in Western Australia. And I think there's more for them to do. So Capricorn is a stock I'm really excited about at the moment. And the second one is Genesis Minerals, GMD, and David referenced it earlier. And I think it's Capricorn probably 3 or 4 years ago. And so what's transpired there is Raleigh Finlayson has joined as managing director, and he was the MD and the sort of the major architect, I guess, of Saracen over the last 7 or 8 years prior to its merger with Northern Star in the last 12 months. Raleigh stepping in as MD and a major shareholder. Genesis is a gold exploration slash development play, but their assets are wedged right in between where Saracens were, in and around Leonora. So, you know, really sticking to what he knows. And I'm excited because, you know, we were fortunate to be on the Saracen journey for much of it. And it's good to be back at the start again. Hopefully emulating some of that success would be great.
Well, that was for spicy small cap resources and material stocks. We hope you enjoyed this thematic episode of Buy, Hold, Sell. If you did, why not give it a like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're adding new content every week.
Thanks for listening to Buy, Hold, Sell, brought to you by Livewire Markets, Australia's number one source of expert investment analysis. Register for free at livewiremarkets.com to discover more exclusive investing articles, videos, and podcasts.